We keep moving. Whoa, boy, that. We keep moving through these heroes of the faith here, and today we're talking about Moses. And Moses is interesting. He's, for the Jews, he's maybe their most important character out of their history. Sometimes it's Abraham, but Moses is definitely in the top two or three of the characters in their history. And so when the writer of Hebrews is talking about those who have showed tremendous faith, to bring Moses into that and show that Moses, the giver of the law, the one who brought the commandments down from the mountain on the tablets of stone, that Moses was operating under faith is something that's a real big lesson to these people. It's a real important thing for them to grasp. And so he looks at Moses in several little places in his life and how faith was significant there. The story of Moses is one that we're probably mostly fairly familiar with. I'm going to probably throw a few little explanatory comments in here. When we look at Moses being born, which we'll find in Exodus chapter 2. And the situation at that time was that the Jews were slaves in Egypt. They had been there for 400 years, and they didn't have much hope. They were gradually falling into a state of despair, and things were not going well for them. In fact, the Egyptians had decided that they really wanted to wipe out the Jews completely. And so had started a process of extermination. They were going to kill all the male children that were born, and that would eventually destroy those people. Now, I have to wonder, because the Egyptians were getting a lot of labor out of these slaves, to wipe them out was maybe counterproductive in some ways. But in the middle of this, we have a Levite, a man who is in the family of Levi, and his wife, who have already got two children. They have a son and a daughter, and now they have another son. And at this point, these laws have come into effect. The Egyptians are going to find this baby, and they're going to kill him. And so they put him into a basket. The mom takes and puts him in a basket and puts him into the Nile. And we're familiar with this story that he floats in the Nile and his sister is watching. And Pharaoh's daughter comes and finds this baby floating in the basket, takes him out, and takes him to raise as her own daughter. Or her own son, yeah. Pharaoh's daughter, son. Yeah, we'll get all these things correct here eventually. And she actually hires Moses' own biological mother to be his nurse while he's nursing, so that the mother actually has considerable ongoing contact there. So Moses is saved from an intended death by the actions of his parents and the actions of Pharaoh's daughter, which is kind of outside of that. But his parents put him into the river because they trusted that God would work something out. And the idea of, we don't know how it's all going to come about, and we don't know what God's got in mind, but we're going to just put him into God's hands. And so Moses starts his life existing because of faith. He survives the purge of the children there because of the faith of his parents, who trusted God enough that they were willing to put him out there and say, Lord, you can take care of him. You can make this work. And God did. God brought someone an incredible coincidence, if you're into the humanist side of things, that brought the one person who really was able to put Moses in a position where he learned things, he developed skills and connections and everything that for the rest of his life would allow him to be God's person, to be God's leader for the people. And it's because of who God brought to rescue him out of that water. Even though she wasn't a believer, even though she didn't know that it was God who was behind it, that was God at work. And so Moses is drawn out of the water and he has a life because the faith of his parents put him into the river. You know, he's alive because his parents tossed him in the river. That didn't sound right. So Moses grows up, and he grows up inside of Pharaoh's palace, and he is taught, and he is given everything that the ruler of Egypt has, and he's in a position where historically Pharaoh's daughter, as we understand, was the only child of this particular Pharaoh. And so Moses, as her adopted son, would have been in line to rule Egypt. But he turns his back on that after he goes and he looks at his people and he sees what is going on with his people. And he turns his back on what Egypt offers. Now, the way that this goes on, okay, the things that Moses does to get there, because he doesn't just go out, look around and say, oh, I've got to follow these people and help these people and stuff. He goes out and he observes that it says, now when it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren and looked at their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that way, and when no one saw, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Now that's not an example of how to operate in faith. And this is something I keep seeing this as we go through in Hebrews, and it's talking about the faith of these people. A lot of them, their faith is something that shows up kind of after they mess up. They try to do things on their own. And I think there's a real lesson for us there that often we think we know how to make God's plans work out. Abraham thought he had it sorted. It didn't go so well for him until he surrendered to God's will. Moses goes out, and this is one of those little things. It's swatting one mosquito out of the 50,000 that are flying around the campfire. It doesn't really solve the problem. So he goes and he kills this Egyptian who's beating this Hebrew, and all of a sudden he's opened up a can of worms. In that action, whether, you know, and it's obviously not an impulsive, a real impulsive thing, because it says that he looked this way and that. In other words, he premeditated what he was going to do. He considered it, and he made a decision to take an action that may have been, was kind of flawed in a lot of ways, but he took that action consciously knowing that in doing it, he was putting himself in a position of risk. And when it becomes apparent that others know what happened, that it's becoming common knowledge, he realizes that he has forfeited his position in Pharaoh's household. And he leaves. He puts his life in God's hands and he leaves the country. Now, there's no evidence that there was a witch hunt, that there was any attempt to hunt him down or anything, but he has to go away. At least in his mind, he has to go away. And he leaves basically trusting that God's going to take care of him. And he ends up in Midian, out there in the wilderness. And he is waiting, you might say, although I don't think he knew that he was waiting, but he was waiting for God's timing to be fulfilled. Now, in the in Hebrews, it doesn't talk about how once he has reached this point in time and God has heard the crying out of his people, and now he's going to send someone to deliver them, to bring them out of Egypt. He's going to send Moses. And he gets a hold of Moses, and I've always really liked the account of the burning bush and the call of Moses here, mainly because if we're back in Exodus 3, and he talks about God is telling Moses, you know, I've heard the cry of the children of Israel and everything. And down in 3:10, he says, "Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" He was raised in Pharaoh's palace. And he comes up with this, "Well, no, I don't want to go do that." Moses is making excuses, something which Moses is good at. Frankly, he does this a number of times throughout his life. He makes excuses to not do what God is calling him to do. He always loses, but he does make excuses. That may be a lesson there too. And so God says, "I will certainly be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain." Now, God goes and he gives Moses a bunch of signs, and he shows him that he is able, that God is able to do the things that he promises. And so this is when Moses goes back to Egypt, he goes with faith in God. And it's real important that he goes believing that God is able to do these things because he has seen God do things. He's seen the hand of God. And now he's willing to go and trust. When he goes and he's talking with Pharaoh and there's all these plagues and everything going on, Moses is willing to trust that God will do what he says he's going to do. When God says, "Go tell Pharaoh that I'm going to bring darkness on the land," Moses knows God will do it. He says, "You know, I'm going to bring the frogs or the whatever he's going to bring next." You know, Moses trusts God, because he's seen God do things. He's seen him demonstrate that he has that power. And so Moses is willing to go back, and he's willing to confront Pharaoh, not because he thinks he's got it under control, but because he has faith in God that God is able to take care of things. And so Moses comes back, and he goes through all of these different plagues and things, and eventually they get down to the end of it, and God has hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he says, you know, here's the last thing. He says, "I'm going to send the angel of death, and he is going to kill the firstborn of every person throughout the land, of every animal throughout the land. The firstborn male is going to die. Except if you follow these instructions." And he gives them specific instructions that they're to kill a lamb, they are to have a meal, they are to take the blood from the lamb and they're to put it on the doorposts and the lintels of the house. They are to go through this process. And he tells Moses, this is what all the people have to do in order to protect themselves from the angel of death. First of all, Moses believes God. Moses has faith that God will do what he said he's going to do, both the killing and the protecting. And out of his faith, Moses is able to persuade the people. Man, and that's a big deal, because he's going into this nation now. He's been away for 40 years. And he comes back, and he's suddenly brought plagues, and he's done all of this stuff, and the Egyptians are mad at all the Jews now and everything. And now he's telling them, "I want you to go through this ritual. I want you to do these things, and I want you to be ready to just get up and leave town as soon as Pharaoh says we can go, because he's going to say we can go tomorrow. He's going to just chase us out of here. He's very persuasive because he believes. He's got faith, and his faith makes him persuasive. He's able to communicate his faith to the other people. And part of that is that he's been telling them all along that these different things are going to happen, and they see them happen. They've seen God's power demonstrated. So they have faith that God is able to do the next thing. And so by faith, it says that he kept the Passover in the sprinkling of the blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. Now, what is happening with the Passover, what's happening in the life of Moses, is that we're seeing God paint a picture of salvation in Jesus Christ. See, time after time, Moses is delivered from death because of the hand of God. And the last one that's talked about here in Hebrews is the Red Sea. And Moses leads the people out, and they're following God. They're going where God takes them. And God leads them out across a chunk of desert for a few days, and pow, right up against the shore of the sea. And there they are. Water on one side, the Egyptian army coming on the other side. And the people, in their deep faith, their abiding trust in God, say, "Why did you bring us out here to die?" And Moses says, "Wait. God's got a plan." I was thinking about this week. Consider Moses. Now, if you've seen the movie The Ten Commandments, you've seen the Charleston Heston Moses, you know, the staff and the beard and the big thing. I have to wonder, Moses turns from the people. He's just been told by God, go out, raise your hand, raise your staff, extend your hand over the water, and you will go through on dry land. Moses has never seen anything like this, and he may not even really know what God's got in mind at this point. All of the people are back here. They're mad at Moses for putting them into this situation. So he's in a risky spot, and he says, "Watch this." And he turns around to the water, and I see Moses step up to the water there, and he steps to the shore, and rather than that Charleston Heston Moses, I'm more in the mode of, you know, he steps up, he's got this, and he says, "Okay, Lord, this had better work, or I'm in real trouble." And Moses raises his hand and says, "Okay, Lord, it's on you." Because in the character of Moses, there's always a thread of doubt in his faith. There's always a struggle. And I think that's true of all of us. We struggle in our faith. But when the chips were down, when he had to step up, he raised his staff, he extended his hand over the water, and the wind blew, and the waters parted. And Moses knew that God was going to save them. See, this was the thing, is that in the Passover, in going through the Red Sea, these were times they depended on God to save them. This was God's plan. In the Passover, he told him, "Follow all of these instructions. This is my plan." Moses didn't make that up. He didn't come up with a way to protect them from the angel of death. It's God's design. Moses didn't figure out where they should go through the wilderness. Moses didn't figure out how they were going to get across the Red Sea. You know, he didn't call in the army engineers and say, "We need a really, really big pontoon bridge fast." God set up the plan, and God carried it out. And it was because Moses trusted God to do what he had promised that they were able to get through. When we look at the Passover, we see an example of Christ. We see a picture of Jesus Christ. We see the blood of the sacrificed lamb being used to save us from death. When we look at the crossing of the Red Sea, we see the hand of God opening a way for his people, for those who have faith in him, to escape sure death by God's plan. And that those who do not have faith, those who are the unrighteous, the Egyptians, were destroyed. The story of Moses points us to our salvation in Jesus Christ. That when we think about the fact that God has designed and provided our salvation, we don't make it up. We don't invent it. We don't do anything to make it happen. God designed it. God did it. He provided the Lamb. It was his blood that covers us, that protects us from the sure and certain death that we deserve. He opens up that way for us to get to the promised land, to get to eternity with him. And he opens it for his people, for those who trust in him, to get through. And he lets us through, and not those who are unrighteous. God gave the children of Israel the Passover that it would remind them that it was by his plan, his effort, and by shed blood that they were alive. God gave the Lord's Supper to us, given, incidentally, in conjunction with the Passover meal. He gave it to us that we would remember that it is through God's plan, God's shed blood, that we are delivered from sin and that we have life. He says, this is so that you will remember that it's my work, it's my blood, my love, that you have no life, you have no way to get to the other side. You have no hope other than in me. And he says, do this so that you remember. And so we come to the communion table today to remember that God gave us deliverance. That we are saved from our sins through his plan and his sacrifice. And I have the elders come forward, please.